Welcome to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir.
If you've got pets, he's got answers.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Steve can help. We're positive.
Oh, God, this thing is going downhill fast.
You've got America's pet expert here on Steve Dale's Pet World.
I'll tell you, I may have the number one pet radio show, but I have America's favorite veterinarian in the studio with, well, we maybe think so, in the studio with me now, Dr. Natalie Marks. How are you?
I'm great, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for getting up so early this morning. I appreciate that. Our phone number, because we're going to chit-chat a little bit about all sorts of different things. I want to talk about the dog flu, summer safety, and our pets. But most importantly, we're here for you. Our phone number and text number, one in the same. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can call in and hear Jasmine's beautiful voice. Say hello, hello, hello. And as I say, we are here to help you, and we want to do that. Dr. Marks, first of all, congratulations. So let me explain what this is. There are a list of submissions from all over the country. America's favorite veterinarian. It is something the American Veterinary Medical Foundation has been doing now 1, 2, 3 years, I believe. This is the third year. And they, not they, you, all of you choose America's favorite veterinarian, but they're from submissions. There were a bunch, I don't know how many, a bunch of submissions, like 5 or 6, that could have been from Chicago. And it turned out 2 of the top 20 finalists are from Chicago. Dr. Klein at Chicago Veterinary Emergency and Medical Center is one of them, and well-deserved. He's been doing what he's been doing for 30 years, and I told him he's a pioneer. He truly is. Before emergency medicine was even thought about, he was up all night treating pets at one of the premier emergency facilities in the nation. So he deserves this, not only for what he's done this past year, which we'll talk about, having to do with the dog flu, but for a career, really. But you are among the finalists. And last year you were. This year you are again among the finalists. And I think a lot of it has to do with your demeanor every day. You are, if you look up veterinarian in the dictionary, we might as well see your picture. Mm-hmm. Because you are there as a caring veterinarian who I talk about all the time, because follow-up is important. Having relationships with clients is very important. Not only the pets, but the pet owners, of course. And you are able to do both. But it's what you and your colleagues went through, really, with the dog flu when it was at its worst. And I don't know that the general public understands. So if you could do sort of a brief dog flu history, how it occurred or and how it came about in Chicago, and then what you were experiencing. I don't know. We've had veterinarians talk about the symptoms and all that, and I want to talk about that. But we've not talked about your perspective. It was like, it's amazing that many of your employees, and I'm really not only talking about Blum Animal Hospital, I'm talking about many of your colleagues also all over the city, didn't have battle fatigue. That's how bad it was. Explain.
Well, this, you know, for those who don't know, this was a novel, a brand new virus that came to the States from South Korea. And although we've dealt with canine influenza before, this was a very, what we call virulent strain. So it affected almost 100% of the dogs that were exposed to it. It was incredibly contagious, still is. But the problem is there's really no antidote. This is a viral disease. So that was causing viral pneumonias. And you know, we are normally a practice that sees anywhere from maybe 1 to 3 coughing dogs a day, depending on the season, usually kennel cough or, you know, heavy boarding, you know, opportunities like spring break and summertime. We were seeing anywhere from 15 to 20 contagious viral coughing / pneumonias a day for several weeks. So when you think about a general practice, that's not something you're usually prepared for. So we really had to shift all of our thinking into more of a ground zero and, you know, bring us back into, you know, virology, immunology, all the things that we quote unquote learn about in school, but never really have to practice to the nth degree.
And, well, if you do the math, that's 100 a week. So What I'm going to do, and I began investigating this, I'm curious, when the flu is really bad, how many cases pediatricians see a day? It's actually, I believe, less than that, first of all. And secondly, there's pictures of you all over the internet with hazmat suits on, and your colleagues also.
Right. I mean, again, because this virus is so contagious and can live on clothing for up to 48 hours, we were in what's called PPE, which is personal protective equipment. So cap, mask, gown, gloves, and booties for every patient, and bleaching down every exposed surface for 5 minutes after seeing those patients. So, you know, I kind of joke a little bit about it now, but I was seeing appointments in our parking lot. I was seeing appointments in cars. I was seeing appointments on the street. I was talking to people and doing kind of James Harriet medicine, which is actually quite exciting for a while, because it is something out of the ordinary and very novel and really groundbreaking in the U.S. for this is going to go down in history as a pretty interesting event in veterinary medicine. And, you know, unfortunately, we would have loved to have every outcome be a good outcome. There were some, you know, passings during this flu, and that's the worst, you know, part of this.
The official number was 8 dogs that died. The official number were in the hundreds that were sickened. But according to our county veterinarian, and you've agreed with this, there are likely many more that sadly died, and many, many more that were sickened, probably well into the thousands.
Completely agree, because not everybody was testing for this. We didn't have an accurate test at the beginning of the outbreak. And also, it depended on when the dog was sick and when you tested, because if you tested too late, you wouldn't even catch the viral particles on the test. So it was incredibly overwhelming, exhilarating, frustrating. I mean, you kind of tie every emotion into it, but it's why you're a vet, because you know, we deal with the human-animal bond. We had dogs that were very sick. We had moms and dads that were incredibly worried and scared and really kind of in the dark about what was happening. And it was our job to help both of those sides, and that's what I love.
Well, you were dealing, that's an excellent point, because you were dealing, obviously, with the very sick dogs, many of them. But you were also dealing with people who were sleep-deprived because they were up all night after night after night after night with a coughing dog. What's more, at the very beginning especially, it was very scary because no one knew exactly what was going on.
Right. And again, the numbers were overwhelming. So we were having boarding facilities calling us and saying, hey, we've got 72 dogs here sick. Can we bring them over? Well, that's not a normal day at our practice. So, you know, trying to accommodate and again, being a points resource and really educating. And that was really what I was fortunate enough to be able to do, is I was really able to educate. And I think that's what helped a lot of people, just kind of knowing that, well, you know what, Blum and, you know, they're going to really take the lead and try and send out proactive emails and educate the public and be on the news and, you know, be there on the phone and doing all that they can on Facebook to give us every update and take precautions appropriately.
I think you did, and I think you saved lives as a result. But also what you did is you created a new paradigm. I mean, this was an epidemic. So
It still is.
Yeah. So Dr. Klein told me, and this is the guy that went to veterinary school quite some decades ago, and he said, I've learned about epidemics. I really didn't know what they are. Now I know what a true epidemic is. I mean, you lived through history, as you mentioned, but also you created, I think, with others, a way out, if you will. Okay, how to respond. It doesn't have to be the dog flu. It could be anything.
Absolutely.
How to respond when something unexpected happens. And I do think, and one of the reasons why you're nominated for America's Favorite Veterinarian is you did lead the way and you're continuing to educate. In fact, you're speaking in Atlanta about this. You and I are speaking together at a couple of veterinary conferences. And what's important is that now there's at least some model that wasn't there before. And as I say, it doesn't have to be the dog flu. It could be anything.
Right. And, you know, I love to learn. You know, if I could be a continual student, I would be. It's a nerdy craving of mine. But what's really great is that I learned so much about being a vet, about myself as a person, things that I wouldn't even think about. Like, you know, would I have woken up one morning on a Sunday and thought that someone was going to be calling me that I was working with, from one of the pharmaceutical companies and saying, hey, guess what? What you were dealing with is actually a virus from South Korea. Would I ever have thought that I would start becoming a leading expert on on a South Korea virus? No. But that's so exciting. You know, thinking about the U.S. quarantine policy for dogs, you know, that's a whole nother topic for you, Steve. But, you know, can you, if you decided from, Russia to fly here with your dog, do you have to do anything special? Really not. You need a rabies vaccine, you know, compared to other countries. So we really are a country with no borders. And just because you practice in Chicago doesn't mean you might not be exposed.
She's
to
sounding like Donald Trump now.
No,
we hope not.
No, we're just talking about having a global perspective in veterinary medicine.
I understand. 6:47 now on WGN. We're going to pause because I need to here. I've got a handful of commercials, big handful, but then we've got a lot of your phone calls, a lot to take. 312-981-7200. We will get to as many as we can. I do want to do an update on the dog flu too. America's favorite veterinarian. She may be just that. I think she is. Vote for Dr. Natalie Marks. Dr. Marks, how do people vote for you besides just walking down the street holding up signs and saying, vote for Dr. Marks, vote for Dr. Marks?
This is sponsored by the AVMF, the American Veterinary Medical Foundation. You can go to the website at www.avmf.org.
Excellent. Cindy, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, you have a question for Dr. Marks.
I do. My son, about 9 months ago, moved back home and brought his cat with him. He's a male cat, about a year and a half old. He has behaviors that I'm wondering if it's possible to change. If you try to pet him, which you can tell he really wants affection and attention, after, you know, a couple of seconds, he'll try to scratch you or bite you. And people who I know who have cats have told me, you know, flick him in the nose.
No, don't do that. What's
exactly,
don't
that
do that.
Thought.
No. You're right not to, Dr. Marks. What should she or what can she do?
Well, first thing is I would just make sure that he's had a current veterinary exam. Okay. Because we always want to make sure before we assume something's behavioral that there's nothing medically going on that could be painful. But, you know, it's called petting-induced reactivity or petting-induced aggression. It's really, really common in cats. I don't know if anyone's actually determined why some cats do this, but it's really a desensitization process. So although it's sometimes frustrating for owners, it's really on you to start letting him come to you. And we start with just one pet and then letting him go. And actually you removing yourself from that, and then doing that for a week or two, and if he does fine and has no reactions that are inappropriate, then you do two pets and then let him go, and you really work up slowly. There are some cats that we just have to accept. Every cat and dog has a different personality and they're all unique. So if you wanted a lap cat that would sit on your lap for 30 minutes to an hour every night, it's probably not going to be him, but that doesn't mean he's not going to be an amazing cat for your house. But it's really desensitization, and I would completely agree with Steve. We don't want to punish him or do anything where you're making contact with him inappropriately, because that's really not, it's unfortunately going to backfire on you eventually.
Paula, thank you very much, by the way, for calling. Paula, you are now on WGN. Good morning.
Well, thank you and good morning. I'm calling because Joey, my Westie, has come down with diabetes, and he actually went blind overnight. And we took him in last week, and we're told that he needs not just like regular doses of insulin, but he has to go in for a quick, you know, a lot of insulin, a lot of testing. And the problem is, of course, that financially this is an enormous expense at once, which, you know, I'm a senior citizen, and I'm even in a wheelchair, so I could write you a sob story, you know. But the point is, Joey's the one who's going to suffer, because basically if you can't afford to take care of them immediately, they want to just do euthanasia. And this is pathetic, because the cat can be helped, but we have to pay it out, and as you are well aware,
you said
it's not a system anymore.
Right. Well, it can be, Paula. Dog or cat?
Joey's a Westie, a nice okay. little doggy.
Okay, you said cat. That's why we're confused. Okay.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. So, Dr. Marks.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that they diagnosed Joey with DKA, so an emergency state of diabetes.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Yes. You know, this is such a tough one. My heart breaks for you because there are so many people in your situation. Unfortunately, DKA is a life-threatening state of diabetes. So in regards to treatment options, there really is only one treatment option, which is most likely what your veterinarian is recommending, which is staying in the hospital and doing emergency insulin to try and get Joey to a more stable place that could be managed at home. But there are assistance funds out there. The Chicago Veterinary Medical Association Foundation has an assistance funds for people just like you that are in need during a time of crisis or emergency. So I would strongly encourage you not to give up, but we can certainly, if you want to call after the show, we can give you some resources to help find some assistance. It can be very challenging, I have to be honest with you, to treat some dogs with diabetes, especially if they have other issues going on or other concurrent diseases. But I certainly want to try and help you give them a chance.
Well, that would be great to help because I'd have to have some kind of a list. I've tried to do it on the internet, but as I said, I'm a senior and not too good at all this.
The Chicago Veterinary Emergency, I mean, Chicago Veterinary Medical Association, 630-325-1234. You know what? Before I give you a number, forget that. Everyone forget it. People are going to be dialing this poor person now. Hold on. Give Jasmine your number and I'll call you back, okay?
Okay.
Hold
good,
on.
Good luck.
Hold on. Thank hold on. All right. Thank you. We will have you back because we couldn't get to all the phone calls or text. We're out of time. So, Dr. Marks, first off, congratulations.
Thank you.
You should be America's favorite veterinarian. But you know what? If the voting doesn't go that way, I can assure you, you are my favorite veterinarian.
Thank you, Steve. It's an honor to be here, an honor to be nominated.
Well, it is. Not everyone can be.